Yeah, I mean, I do this too. I'm always floating around on
Yes.
my PJ, you
The
know, a
PJ, yes.
love flying PJ. It's the way to go. Welcome to Lawyers Behaving Badly. I'm Karen Delaney.
And I am Jennifer Judge. How are you doing, friend?
It's been a morning. It's been
It's
a
been a
bit of a
morning.
morning.
Yeah,
It
you kind of
started.
prefaced that. I want to hear all about it.
Started last night where I was working pretty late at night because I frequently maintain goblin hours as a solo who doesn't have any boss but herself. And our internet stopped working, and I don't know, but my computer was like, oh, well, I'm going to stop working too. And I had
Oh
these like
no.
multiple Word documents that all get saved to the cloud, and they wouldn't
No.
save to the cloud because the internet wasn't working. And my computer was like, we're out of memory. Let's close everything. And I was like,
No.
God damn it. Fortunately, it looks like everything got saved because it was like quite a bit of work that I had done. So I didn't know if we were going to be recording today because I didn't know if we'd have internet,
Oh
but obviously we
no.
do. And then the morning's just been kind of a shit show because you and I are recording a presentation for a CLE given by the Texas State Bar, and we were supposed to rehearse this morning. And I texted you and was like, but could we not rehearse this morning? And maybe we can do it this weekend. Wouldn't that be fun before we record with the bar on Monday? Because I've got something I have to go do this afternoon for a friend and a very longtime friend, and just had to move things around a bit. And then we were supposed to start recording here at 9, and I was like, but what if we start recording at 9:15? Because I haven't done anything for my hot toppies and I need 15 minutes to like frantically slam together a brief outline.
No, I get
So,
it. And when you reached out and you were like, can we not do our dry run through today? I was like, thank God, because I haven't looked at that presentation yet since we
me neither.
agreed on who divvied it up. So I was like, oh, thank God, because I was going to spend 20 minutes like frantically cramming for that too. So I was,
Yeah,
you were like, can
same.
we do it later? And I was like, yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Yeah. I also was planning on rehearsing it before you and I went through it together to make sure we hit the 45-minute mark together and smooth it out and all that kind of stuff. And I absolutely have not gotten a chance to do that. So
Yep.
that's on my to-do list sometime.
Sometime, yes.
I don't know, along with like a whole bunch of other things. So it's busy. And I'll ask you how you're doing, but full disclosure, we recorded like 2 days ago. So
Yes. Things are still the same from 2 days
yeah,
ago.
cool.
I'm good today, actually. It's nice. Like the kids are healthy. My husband's back in town. We have like we call it the devil's schedule for kids' sports on Saturday night. My youngest has a football game at flag football game at 5, which means he needs to be there at 4. My oldest has a birthday party from 4 to 7, and then
Of
my
course.
oldest has a football game from at 8 p.m., which means he needs to be there at 7. So it's going to
Oh my
be like
gosh.
driving back and forth. And last week we were there for like 5 hours for 2 games because you had to get there for practice. And then anyway,
Yeah.
we've just given up Saturday nights now to flag football the way the schedule breaks down. So we're doing that. And then Sunday we don't have any plans because I think everybody's exhausted. And I'm very excited about that. Although we may have a re rehearsal plan now, but that's fine.
Well,
That's not that.
I was going to say, in fact, you do have plans, which is rehearsing a bar
Yes.
presentation with
Yeah.
me. So,
You will
what
get,
an exciting weekend.
and on Sunday, you will get to see me in all my glory because I do not change out of my pajamas. I barely shower. It's going to be like maybe I put on athleisure, maybe I don't, but it's more than likely like disgusting. So that's for you to get to witness. So lucky you.
You'll be in good company. I'm sure I'll be the same, or probably like unshowered after a workout or something disgusting. So it'll just be a great day for us to rot
Yes,
together as
exactly.
we work through our presentations. What are friends for? We've known each other for so long.
Exactly.
It's fine.
Exactly. Like we the nighttime pres when a friend of we record at nighttime, we compare how glazed donut our skin is with our skincare. Yeah. So this will just be glazed donut, but oily skin, because I haven't washed my face yet on Sunday.
Disgusting.
Yes.
Well, I have two hot toppies for us today because I couldn't decide between the two because they are both delightful in my mind. The first one, as we know, the UAW, United Auto Workers Union, is striking against the big three automakers, which for those who don't know are Ford, GM, and Stellantis. And Stellantis is the conglomerate that gobbled up Chrysler. I actually had no idea. When I saw the name Stellantis, I was like, what is a Stellantis?
I don't see the Stellantis on the road very often.
Yeah, so they gobbled up Chrysler, and we've got three plants striking so far, and more are supposed to join today. I love it. It's amazing. I'm on Strike Talk on TikTok, which is like the best side of TikTok. But in an interview, Senator Tim Scott was asked whether he would like pick a side between the big three and the unions. And in response, did you hear about this?
I saw the headline. I have not read the stories yet about it.
Well, in response, he said, quote, "I think Ronald Reagan gave us a great example when federal employees decided they were going to strike. You strike, you're fired. Simple concept to me, to the extent that we can use that once again."
Anytime you find yourself starting the sentence with, "I think Ronald Reagan gave us a great example," like, shit's going off the rails real fast right there.
Yeah, just take a pause and maybe reevaluate your life choices.
Unless the sentence is ending with a great example of something terrible, ... you should not start that sentence.
Or like, "I think Ronald Reagan gave us a great example when he hopped off this mortal coil."
Yes.
So now, Sean Fain, who is the president of the UAW, has filed an NLRB charge against Tim Scott.
That's so funny.
Again, the NLRB is the National Labor Relations Board. We've been doing a lot of labor talk recently.
We've been doing like total labor podcast recently.
I know. I think number one, it's a niche interest for both of us. Mm-hmm. But we're also in sort of a time period of a lot of organizing activity. Mm-hmm. So it's something that's coming up quite frequently. But with the National Labor Relations Board and under the National Labor Relations Act, anybody can file a charge with the NLRB against an employer. You don't have to be an employee at the company. You don't have to be somebody whose rights were directly violated. Anybody can file this charge. And Tim Scott is, in fact, an employer. He runs Tim Scott for America, which I guess is like his presidential campaign.
His campaign, yeah.
So saying "you strike, you're fired" could be construed as a direct threat against his campaign workers who have the right to strike under federal law.
Mm-hmm.
And I read an Intercept article about this, and they quoted a professor of labor law who was like, yeah, saying "you strike, you're fired" is definitely a pretty textbook example of unfair labor practices under the NLRA. I thought this was absolutely hilarious. I wanted to share that little bit of joy with you.
I love the idea of like malicious filings of these, and because you can't just go out and say that. And so like, if there's a means to enforce something like that, then go for it at that point.
I love it. I love it. Sean Fain, I think, is kind of a chaos monster. And as a frequent chaos monster myself, I just love to see it.
I agree. And as someone who appreciates watching chaos monsters do their dirty work, even more so. Yes.
Yes. I also am a chaos spectator, as evidenced by this podcast. My second hot toppy, Clarence Thomas. We're back, baby.
We're back. He is what it would be easier, honestly, if we could just list what this man has paid for in his life. Like one time he got a sandwich at Subway with his own money. Like, we're at that point now.
I was gonna say, I'm sure he has taken his very expensive luxury RV that he evidently didn't pay for through a McDonald's drive-thru and paid for his own cheeseburger or something at some point. But I mean, who knows? So ProPublica published another article just this morning about Justice Thomas. And I saw this like before I'd even made my tea this morning. I was just rolling out of bed and I sat straight up and immediately my day improved. I felt the joy just floating through my body at the possibility of another Clarence Thomas corruption scandal. In this article, did you get a chance to read it this morning?
I've read the first half of it, so I haven't had a chance to read through the second half, but I got the high notes.
Well, let's share them and discuss.
Yes.
This is all about how cozy Thomas is with the Koch Network, which is a political organization founded by brothers and billionaires, Charles and David Koch. David's now dead. Charles is still active in making the world a worse place. And according to ProPublica, the Koch Network is best known for its work helping to cultivate the Tea Party during the Obama years. They brought in $700 million in donations in 2021, which is the last year that we have data for. They have more than 1,000 employees. I'll give you guys a hint if you don't know. These guys are not Democrats, and they're not fans of government in general. So we find out Thomas flew on a private jet. Paid for by who? Because, of course, it was never disclosed.
Of course not.
So, no idea. To a Koch Network fundraising event in Palm Springs in 2018, where he attended a private event with donors. He's been to at least two of these that we know about. And the only reason ProPublica knows about these is because, I guess, former staffers were willing to talk to ProPublica about it. Like, these reporters managed to find somebody from the Koch Network that was willing to tell them about this, at least three former staffers. And the staffers said, yeah, Thomas was the draw for the event. I mean, it's access to him. It's access to him that made this event such a big draw. And donors typically have to give at least $100,000 just to get in the front doors.
That's wild.
Just to get in the front doors.
Yeah.
Then people who donate millions of dollars get to go to dinner with Charles Koch and high-profile guests. And ProPublica says that Thomas went to at least one of those dinners. I think it's safe to assume that he's probably been to many more. And they describe extreme efforts to keep these events and what happens at them secret. So the former staffers that they spoke with said when the network puts on these events, they will rent out the entire hotel for the event to make sure that there's nobody wandering the hotel who doesn't belong there. Any documents left behind are collected and shredded. Another recent attendee told a story about how Koch security staff patrolling in a golf cart escorted the attendee's Uber driver out of the hotel to make sure he left. They're like, get the fuck out. Don't stand around. Don't use the bathroom. There's a Chevron station down the road. GTFO. And to give you a flavor of what these people are up to, at that 2018 event, a speaker touted the group's recent successes, which included repealing voter-approved donor disclosure initiative, retraction of mining and environmental overreach, stopped Albuquerque paid sick leave mandate.
Get those workers back in their fucking jobs if they're sick.
I mean, this is like cartoonishly evil stuff that they're doing. And Thomas is like, I'm here. I'm ready to party.
Did you donate your millions? See me? Yes, exactly.
Interestingly, for the 2018 event where he got to fly private, Thomas listed two speaking engagements on his financial disclosure for the year, including one in New York and one at the Federalist Society in Texas. Did not disclose this at all, of course.
Weird. So weird. And this is, I don't know if they talk about this because he's redone some disclosures. Is this his redone disclosure?
No, that's the crazy thing. That's the crazy thing is that as a result of some of their reporting earlier in the year, he amended his disclosure reports to disclose some of this stuff that he's been getting so much shit for. Didn't include this, which again,
I mean, it's like a cartoon.
It's ridiculous.
So bad.
Every time we talk about this, we're like, if you just kick over a pebble, you're going to find more corruption and grift. Like, this isn't the end of it. It's not just going to be Harlan Crow who's trying to get access to him. Like, if you are anybody with enough money, I don't think he cares who you are. He just wants the benefits that come along with being able to hobnob with billionaires and support a lifestyle that he wouldn't be able to simply on the salary of a Supreme Court justice alone. Or, you know, like actually having to write a book, which how much effort could that take? Like, you just hire a ghostwriter, right? Like,
yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
We don't want to like do a lot of work for this, but we do want the trappings and benefit of wealth that we don't have. So yeah, no, I thought that was absolutely hilarious because I had the same question and the answer is no, he has never at any point disclosed this shit. And what's totally insane, which we haven't touched on before, is that there is a judicial code of conduct that applies to lower federal courts.
Yes.
And it seems pretty evident that this sort of conduct would violate that judicial code of conduct. There's nothing similar that applies to the Supreme Court. It's all just vibes and suggestions. It's, like, do you feel like being ethical?
Self-policing. Yeah, it's all quote unquote self-policing. And clearly that's working really, really well.
Here's how well it's working. Did you take administrative law in law school?
I did not.
Okay, I did, and it was one of my favorite classes in law school, and I'm aware that that makes me just like an unhinged dork.
I wish I had, because and when you're in law school, you don't realize how much administrative law actually is relevant to almost every practice you have.
Yeah, and I was going to say, for any law students who are listening, administrative law is one of the classes that I always recommend people take, because it is so critical to an understanding of how many different things work in our government and laws and all that kind of stuff. It's really, really helpful to have that background. So shout out to Ron Levin at WashU. But what's super important about this is we are both familiar with Chevron deference.
Yes, I did see this part.
Yes, which is an extremely longstanding principle of administrative law, where it basically says, you know, the way that our government functions is you have Congress that passes laws, and then under the executive branch, you have these administrative agencies that are responsible for actually like carrying out the intent of those laws. But it doesn't make sense to have Congress trying to draft rules, like very, very, very detailed rules for how the agencies are going to accomplish all of that stuff, because Congress simply does not have the expertise. And I think we can all agree that like they're generally just a bunch of bozos on both sides of the aisle. And so Chevron deference is basically like, you know, if it's reasonable what an administrative agency does, then we're going to defer to the agency's judgment. And this is how our federal government functions in so many different areas. I mean, we talk a lot about labor and employment law, but this is how the EPA operates. It's how OSHA operates. I mean, basically the Department of Transportation, everything is through this rulemaking process where you have experts at the agencies who are developing rules for actually implementing the laws that Congress passes. Okay. Well, here's the deal. Republicans hate that because Republicans fundamentally do not believe in the project of governance. Like that's kind of the real problem that we have with having Republicans in government, is that they don't believe in that fundamental project and they actively try to undermine it. So they fucking hate Chevron deference and they want to get rid of it because, you know, if you get rid of Chevron deference and you push all this work back on Congress, like how do we think that's going to work out for everybody? Like, has anybody been paying attention to what's going on in our government right now? Like, we're about to shut down.
Well, I mean, yeah. And that, but the, you know, that's the point is basically, well, if we take it away from the agencies, nothing will get done. It'll be a free for all. And we won't have to worry about government getting involved in things like fair employment and wages and transportation and the Department of Energy. We'll just let the companies do it because the private market is the best barometer for all of this. And that's their point of view.
We'll be able to pollute the fuck out of our waterways. We're going to pump all sorts of shit into the air and it's going to be fucking awesome because the government's not going to be able to stop us.
The rivers will light on fire just like they used to and we'll love it.
Yeah. The reason I bring this up is because there is a case in front of the Supreme Court in the fall term that like they're probably going to do away with Chevron. Yes. And that's a really, really bad thing. And we're all pretty fucked because of it. Koch Network staff represent the plaintiffs.
Of course they do. Yes.
In 2005, Thomas wrote the majority opinion in a case expanding Chevron's protections for government agencies. He was all on board with Chevron deference. Interestingly, in 2020, he basically retracted that position and was like, oops, no, now I am soups against Chevron deference. It's a piece of shit. And it's really interesting to think about what's been happening in the interim. He's been going to Koch network conferences and living the high life because of some billionaires.
And he doesn't even attempt to rationalize or reason away why he's done this 180 either.
No.
Like he basically is like, no, no, Chevron deference is the worst and it needs to go away. Not like, here's the struggle I've had in the interim with why I made this decision. No, it's just like it's a 180 and we're going on vibes here.
So I'm not sure we've seen yet such a clear through line connecting his largesse from billionaires and his legal positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here we are. What a time to be alive.
The good news is we don't rely on the Supreme Court as a backstop to the insane shit that our Congress does or our our state legislatures do. So it, you know, it's fine. I'm sure we'll all be fine.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. So that's it. Those are my hot toppies. What a delightful little morning.
Yeah, I woke up, my alarm went off, and I scrolled my phone, which is the healthiest thing you can do for your brain, is immediately wake up and start scrolling Blue Sky and Twitter.
Just
highly recommend it. Yes.
Mainlining all of the terrible things that are going on in the world.
Definitely start every day with a rage stroke. It's what I recommend. But I started it, and the first thing I saw was you tweeting about the ProPublica article. And so I was like, "Ooh, here we go. Can't wait." So yeah. I was very excited.
Yeah. Can't wait to see what the fallout from that is. I'm sure that Thomas will probably not even comment. It's kind of interesting to see the difference between him and Sam Alito because, you know, Sam Alito will go on the offensive in the Wall Street Journal opinion pages being like, I don't know what article is about to come out about me, but it's totally false and it's full of shit. Yes. Fuck everybody. Thomas doesn't basically doesn't say anything. He's just like, yeah, what are you going to do about it? Nobody's going to do anything about it. Fuck off.
That's exactly it. His entire approach is, what are you going to fucking do about it? And nothing. Sam Alito's going to write an op-ed with a lawyer who has a case pending before the court this term. Again, the conflicts of interest are just laughable at this point, and no one's going to do anything about it. So you just accept it and move on, and this is like our broken infrastructure, broken, you know, society that we have these days. Like, we just can't rely on self-policing institutions anymore.
Oh, I don't know that we could have relied on them in the first place. Yeah. I mean,
we're learning that now.
Giving people unchecked power never really works well for anybody.
Yeah.
So
weird. I wish we could have ever known that before now. So, well.
Anyway, it's cool. So what a great... On that happy note.
On that happy note, we are going to do our main topic for today.
I am so excited about this because you hinted at it at the end of our last episode. And I was like, oh, I actually know what this is. I started looking into this too. Some of the communications are hilarious. And I've forgot, like I didn't get into the details and I've forgotten a large part of what I read. And so I am extremely excited.
I dove into this one. It was a reader tip or listener tip. And I dove into this one and I was like, okay, this is pretty interesting. And then as I dug in further and further and further, I was like, oh no, this is fantastic. I can't wait to do this one. So for our story this week, we are examining the seedy underbelly of deed and title legal work related to oil and gas exploration in Oklahoma. And this is somewhat niche if you are not familiar with the oil and gas industry, you're not from around these parts. But we will get into it, and it is just fantastic. Our Larry lawyer today is enterprising. He's driven. He's creative. He is really willing to put it all out there, just like you said, in writing. He loves himself some email and some text, so he is fantastic. Larry has his own law firm with a few other partners in Edmond, Oklahoma. Larry specializes in real estate and title work for oil and gas companies. And he's done well for himself, very well for himself. At one point, he owned a Ferrari. He's owned several other sports cars. He has all material possessions and the trappings of ostentatious wealth. And he has, at one point, two private planes. So work in the oil and gas industry for doing title and deed work apparently pays very, very well.
That doesn't seem right. But
no,
I feel it like doesn't. There's a disconnect here. Foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing. I was just, thank you, KP, for teeing this up so perfectly. Let's talk about how Larry did so well for himself. Larry is besties with a guy we will call Johnny. Johnny is a landman for an oil and gas company in Oklahoma. For those not familiar with the oil and gas industry, a landman is someone who scouts potential new locations for oil and gas exploration, and then they insure or buy the company the mineral rights or whatever ownership necessary for the company to conduct exploration on that land. So they're kind of the front face for the exploration and gaining the legal right. By necessity, and we'll talk about it more, a landman is privy to very confidential information. They know exploration plans, what the company's looking for, the areas it may expand, things like that.
That seems like valuable information.
It would be extremely valuable information if someone were to get their hands on it. In 2011, Johnny reaches out to Larry and hires Larry as outside counsel for a company we will call Oil and Gas Co. And he wants them to perform all of their title and real estate work for their land exploration. Mm-hmm. Larry would find out where oil and gas company wanted to drill, and then his job was to perform title work to see who owned those drilling and mineral rights and how to buy a lease or buy the rights for the company to conduct exploration on that land. So that was his role as their lawyer. And you kind of talked about this before. Here's the thing about oil and gas exploration. It is incredibly expensive and competitive. This is not something where you just drill a well and hope for the best. You have teams of people examining the area's geology, completing extensive engineering studies on these potential locations. And these companies, you have to be pretty certain that when you drill a well, it will be productive. But you also have to have, obviously, the legal rights to drill there. So that means buying or leasing this land or the rights to this land that you're looking at. And so there's a little mini economy that pops up as a result of this, and mm-hmm. you have mineral brokers spring up, and they exist to predict the next major area where exploration will occur. So these brokers go out and acquire mineral rights on their own, and then they turn around and sell those rights at a handsome profit to oil and gas companies. So they'll go out, they'll perform their extensive research, and then they'll package these land tracts that they buy together and then pitch them to companies like Oil and Gas Co. as an offering to them. Mm-hmm. And that's how they would make their money. So because of this entire economy, you can see how exploration and development plans for an oil and gas company would be, again, extremely valuable, confidential, and very protected. And so someone with access to the information they had, if they had a bad motive, could easily exploit that information for their own gain. And that's what we call foreshadowing. So let's talk about who that person may be. In 2013, Larry and Johnny, remember they're besties, they go hunting together. And Larry has, during this hunting trip, a proposal for Johnny. Larry offers Johnny a cut of all their profits if Johnny will tell Larry what oil and gas companies' exploration plans are in the future. So the plan specifically is this. As a landman, Johnny obviously knows all the potential locations and what the strategy for this large company are. If Johnny gives that information to Larry, Larry can use it to buy up all the mineral rights before Oil and Gas Co. can, and then they can turn around and act as a mineral broker and sell or lease those rights to Oil and Gas Co. for a profit.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the oil and gas industry is small, and you can't have your outside counsel buying up all the land you intend to explore without raising some eyebrows and requiring some questions. I mean, you could maybe do that once, but you can't do that more than once. Larry's solution to the scheme is to bring in his family. He has his cousin and his father and his other friends and coworkers create LLCs in Oklahoma and Texas, and they're the fronts to the scheme to make money off of Oil and Gas Co. At one point, there are over 30 LLCs who all transfer money and ownership interests constantly, basically to avoid detection through things like Secretary of State records, because I don't want it to be able to be traced back to, obviously, Larry's law firm or Larry or Johnny. Larry and his family create a fictitious person named Justin Roberts to sign for all of their fictitious LLCs, and they give him fake email addresses at the fake companies and a quote-unquote personal email address like justinrobertssoil@yahoo.com. And they even register FEIN information through the fake Justin Roberts to ensure that their scheme is basically undetectable if you were to kind of do a document dive on the ownership of all of these LLCs.
And for people who don't know, the FEIN is the Federal Employer ID number.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. That makes him look like he's actually a real entity that's filed with the IRS to get one. I mean, it's easy to get one of these numbers. It doesn't really yes. take anything more than filing a piece of paper with the IRS. I've done it before. But it helps legitimize him as like a party or whatever.
Exactly. And I mean, I don't recommend lying on a government form to the IRS. I can't imagine it's a good idea. But yeah, you're not supposed to create a fake person to sign it. To get it. But yeah, that's the way that they legitimize these companies. In one specific example, in December 2013, Larry and his family formed multiple LLCs where the registered agent for service of process for these was a paralegal at Larry's law firm. At the same time he's doing all this, Larry is performing his outside counsel work for Oil and Gas Co. and was examining title to areas where Oil and Gas Co. was considering drilling. Amazingly, not long after he receives this work from Oil and Gas Co., the fake LLCs buy thousands of acres in the areas where Oil and Gas Co. had considered drilling and where Larry had performed the work for this company. The fake LLC turns around and pitches these areas as a potential investment to Johnny as the Oil and Gas Co.'s land man. Johnny tells the Oil and Gas Co. that he thinks it's a wise investment and they should purchase it and they need to explore the land that's owned by the fake LLC.
But Johnny knows, right?
Yeah, Johnny's in on the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oil and Gas Co. then buys the leases with the LLCs and buys the right to explore these areas. And they repeat this multiple times. They create LLCs. I always love the vague LLC names like Paramount and Crestwood Operations and Evermore, you know, things like that. Justin Roberts from Paramount would reach out to Oil and Gas Co. through Johnny and would pitch selling leases to the company in areas where, again, Larry knew that the company was exploring. This happens for years. It starts in 2013. In 2016, Larry's law firm identifies two tracts of land of unleased mineral rights in an area that Oil and Gas Co. planned to drill. Pretty quickly, another new LLC is spun up and leases those tracts, and then they turn around and sell a lease to Oil and Gas Co. for exploration. Larry, like we said, loves his email. He would email the documents to his buddies when he'd find something new, when he would get work as Oil and Gas Co.'s outside counsel, and would always admonish his buddies in all caps, "For your eyes only, and nobody finds out that we have this document." And these aren't small amounts that they are making off of Oil and Gas Co. The sale for the leaseholds were in the millions. You know, one was $4 million, $1.5 million for another. And the fake LLCs retain overrides. So not only are they selling this right for exploration to Oil and Gas Co., but they're receiving monthly checks from Oil and Gas Co. on the percentage of any development that they actually find or any oil or gas that they drill on the land.
So they basically have royalty rights.
Yeah, exactly. They do. Larry and the boys are making money hand over fist. And like we said, Larry's law firm is obscenely wealthy. He owns buildings, planes, sports cars, all the trappings of ostentatious wealth. This scheme lasts from 2013 to 2020 when Oil and Gas Co. finally discovers it. It is a shockingly long-running fraud scheme, honestly.
I Yeah. And I've been sitting here the whole time. I think this is kind of as far as I got. And I'm like, so how did they get caught?
Yes.
They must have fucked something up.
Oh, they did. And we're going to get to that because it's pretty shocking when you have, at one point, there were 17 people involved in this scheme and 30 separate entities. So it absolutely shocking it lasts for 7 years when you have that many people around to fuck something up and make an issue. And it's especially true when you have emails between all of these co-conspirators about the actual scheme that they're engaged in when they say, quote, "Remember, don't say a fucking word to anyone. I don't want my buddy fired," referring to Johnny as an employee of Oil and Gas Co. So let's talk about how this was all discovered. One person we haven't mentioned is the CFO of Larry's law firm.
Okay.
Prior to being CFO, this guy worked as a contractor for Larry, basically as a finder for certain investment deals. Larry is not just wedded to his scheme. Larry is out there doing whatever he can to make money. Larry's a hustler. As a finder, this contractor would be entitled to certain percentages of Larry's profit from these investment deals that he basically brings to Larry. He does such a good job with numbers as the finder that Larry offers him the job as the firm's CFO. So this guy accepts, and he starts with the firm in 2018, and he has an annual salary as CFO of $250,000.
Okay.
Which is a very tidy salary for a law firm administrative role. That's not too shabby, especially for what is essentially a solo. The CFO had all the standard perks of working for a small law firm, like he got $25,000 in private jet usage per month. Again, what? Just your standard law firm administrator role.
Yeah, I mean, I do this too. I'm always floating around on my PJ, you know?
The PJ, yes.
Love flying PJ. It's the way to go.
In another standard perk as an administrator, Larry paid for the CFO's nephew's private schooling as well. So that way he didn't have to pay to go to private school.
Oh my God.
Do you think, KP, that it stays smooth sailing for this CFO during his employment with Larry?
Well, obviously not, because we're talking about it today.
Yes. According to a lawsuit filed by Larry, the CFO almost immediately began embezzling money from Larry's firm.
Wait, stop. Larry sued his CFO?
Yes.
Before all this came to light?
Yes.
Oh, that's the critical mistake. You can't sue one of your co-conspirators. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, just wait. There are so many lawsuits involved in this. Like, it was wild. And shout out to Oklahoma for having such open dockets, because it made it really easy to do all of this research.
We love that.
So, according to a lawsuit filed by Larry, the CFO almost immediately begins embezzling money. And according to Larry, it wasn't a complex scheme. Basically, the CFO would wire money to himself personally or to his consulting company. And according to Larry, it was usually in amounts below $10,000, obviously to avoid detection and reporting by the financial institutions processing the wires.
Okay, stop again. This is feeling very glass house to me for Larry to describe anybody else's scheme as not complex, because it's like, my guy, neither is yours. You guys are basically just doing a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
And it's not paperwork that takes a lot. It doesn't take much time to put together your LLC documentation to file with the Secretary of State. Like, you have a template, you slap it together and you file it, especially if you're like doing a scheme like this and your main purpose is not corporate best
governance.
Practices.
Yes,
yeah, like corporate governance. You're just like, I gotta like make this look legitimate, you know?
Yes. And this comes back to bite Larry in the ass, as we can assume. So we have the CFO allegedly making these transactions under $10,000, except when there would be large transaction closings at the firm. Then the CFO would allegedly instruct wires as part of the closing process, but he instead would wire himself like $100,000 into his consulting company instead of the parties involved in the transaction.
Okay, see, this is another reason that I just love this podcast, because what boggles my mind about this is you as the CFO are involved in a fraudulent enterprise that is already netting you crazy benefits like private school tuition and
PJ usage.
use of the PJ, but it's not enough. And I mean, setting aside like, you know, wiring yourself $100,000 or $200,000 or whatever, stealing 10 grand here or there.
Yeah.
What's even the point? Ask for a raise, because honestly, where do you think the leverage is there if you're just like, hey, bud, I'm going to need a raise?
It would be very short-sighted to piss off a co-conspirator. But
over
luckily,
10 grand here and there. Yeah,
exactly. Larry is short-sighted. Larry decides he needs to terminate the CFO for poor performance. This is prior to discovering all of the alleged embezzlement. He decides the CFO is just not good enough and he can't stand working with him.
My friend, you have failed to meet expectations related to stealing and defrauding the firm's own client. We put you on a performance improvement plan and gave you time to improve, and you did not. So we will be ending your employment. We gave you hard
metrics to demonstrate improvement of your stealing over the next 30 days.
Yeah. Your KPIs have been down for a full quarter.
Eventually, the CFO leaves the firm, and Larry allegedly then finds all of this missing money that the CFO has been embezzling. Larry hires counsel, sends a demand letter. They're threatening to file a lawsuit and make all of these allegations against the CFO public unless the CFO agrees to repay these alleged hundreds of thousands of dollars that he stole from Larry's firm.
This is, I am beside myself right now because this is cataclysmically stupid. It is so stupid, especially because Larry is making money hand over fucking fist.
Yes.
What's even if this guy stole $1 million, what's $1 million to you? Leave it alone, walk away.
It gets even stupider. It's even better. I'm so excited.
We're really, this, I feel like this episode is really firing on all cylinders. This is our bread and butter, people doing just like
it is
unfathomably stupid things.
Oh, yeah. This is why I was giggling. I was so excited about this episode. The CFO is not going quietly into that good night when Larry sends his demand letter about this embezzlement, because there is one major problem with Larry's threat. The CFO has copies of the contract he had with Larry that entitled him to all of these payments during his time as CFO, and he has the text from Larry approving all of these payments to himself as CFO.
What? Wait, what? So he didn't steal anything? This was all like just approved by Larry?
Yes, it was all approved by Larry. The CFO's lawyer sends a letter back to Larry and basically explains all of this and then sends the receipts to Larry and basically is like, if you move forward, this will all be public. What do you do if you're Larry at this point?
No, I'm still stuck on the fact that Larry has threatened to sue the CFO for something that Larry approved.
Yep.
Is Larry into drugs? Is this like, are we just all hopped up on coke or something and we don't know what we're doing? Like, I don't understand.
The decision making here? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm really perplexed. All right, so the question is, what do I do if I'm Larry? My brain is still broken. I think I have to question this. I'm trying to
you
think
do.
Of like, what is... Yeah, I'm like, okay, what would a really stupid person do here?
Yes.
And this seems like if you had 1.5 brain cells to like kind of bump into each other occasionally in your cavernous, empty brain, you probably would realize that this is an excellent off-ramp and you would simply walk away.
Mm-hmm.
But those brain cells clearly are just like taking a rest that day. They're on break. So I'm going to assume that he like pursues this.
Yeah. The one thing you can't discount here is ego and the absolute ego that is involved with Larry. And Larry at that point is undaunted and he files this lawsuit and he makes all of these embezzlement allegations public. And true to his promise, The CFO brings the receipts in his answer and motion to dismiss. So KP, I sent you some of the texts between Larry and the CFO. These are screenshots of the text taken from the CFO's phone. So the text from the person on these screenshots is the CFO. Larry is the one responding. You be Larry and I'll be the CFO, and we'll read through some of these, okay?
Okay, I missed most of that because I have to ask you something.
Okay.
So in his answer, the CFO is like, no, but like I was engaged in defrauding a firm client. Here's all the receipts.
No, he basically just says, I was due all these payments as a contractor. He never paid me. Here's the proof of all the payments that he approved. Yeah.
But he's still like, okay, so he hasn't publicly clued anybody into the fact that this whole enterprise is basically fraudulent. Okay, who am I again?
You're Larry, so I'm the dark color, so I'll start. So this is the text. This is the text from the CFO to Larry. I'm cutting myself a check like you mentioned earlier, if that's okay. I appreciate it and hate asking.
Do it. $150K to buy me some time to work on things. Ultimately, 600 is going to be minuscule with what we are going to do.
I'm ready for all this shit to be behind you. I'm ready to get us focused on the next 20 years. I agree, but it's life-changing money for me, literally, and I can't tell you how much I truly appreciate it.
Kissy face emoji.
And there's multiple of these, basically, where he's like, hey, I'm going to wire myself all this money. And Larry's like, cool, dude, do it. So, like,
smoochies.
All of them.
Yeah.
Smoochies, praise hands, you know, so they're all. We also learn how the CFO was terminated. And do you think it was an absolutely by the book termination, KP?
Yeah, I'm certain these guys were following best practices.
Exactly. I have a few more screenshots for you. If you will go down, you be Larry again, and I'll be the CFO.
Okay. I think it's best you look for a new position, CFO. Dead serious. This isn't working. Take your time. You're still my friend, but I can't have my CFO undermining my authority. And then there's another text where he says, So who's insane now?
I did not do anything wrong, but you haven't kept up with it. Insanity is doing the same things over and over. You know the rest. I think there are quite a few other people that are hindering your ability to succeed. I probably care too much with too little influence to make any difference. If you want to change that, I'm three doors down.
Send your resume out tomorrow. Your attitude now is enough for me.
Ha ha ha. Good luck tomorrow. See you Friday.
Well, you aren't handling my shit then. Go be a bitch somewhere else. If you don't think I'm fucking serious, put your resignation on my fucking desk tomorrow.
You can't tell people to change their personalities. That's fucking insane.
Wait, is he like, no, excuse me, I'm going to be a bitch right here. Thank you very much.
I will not go be a bitch somewhere else. I will be a bitch in my office.
I'm happy being a bitch right where I am. Okay. Then Larry says, it's insane for me to keep somebody in that position that won't ensure we have the best chance of succeeding.
I don't know if I've ever terminated someone with, you aren't handling my shit then. Go be a bitch somewhere else.
Sure, I'm adding it to the script though.
Yeah. New training for managers.
Tell you what though, this would make the difficult conversations training a lot more interesting.
Yes. Like, so obviously at this point, the CFO is motivated to fuck over Larry. He files a counterclaim against Larry for breach of contract and for defamation. But the CFO is not done. Because obviously the CFO knew all about the scheme that Larry had with Johnny and making money off of Larry's oil and gas co-client. So you are the CFO. What do you do?
Well, my first immediate thought, I think I'm not far enough out of my own brain. I think my first immediate thought was I'm probably going to go have a sit down with maybe the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a bitch sitting in my office. So I think I try to extort Larry.
The CFO, actually, he marches right down to the FBI and he tells them everything he knows. And then he goes straight from the FBI to Oil and Gas Co.'s office and tells them everything he knows.
Yes, I love it. God, I love a fucking snitch. I love it.
Yeah, he sings like a canary and he gives them everything he has from Larry's office.
I love that he wasn't done with the FBI and that he marched his happy ass in person.
after what we have to assume are very interesting discussions between the CFO and oil and gas company, the company files a lawsuit against Larry and others in April 2020.
Okay.
The lawsuit has multiple amended complaints filed, each one with more and more information as the company discovers more about the scheme from all of the co-defendants.
Oh my God, I love it.
They eventually have up to 17 co-defendants, and they've named at least 20 fake LLCs. As part of this, just like you said, it's not hard to slap an LLC together and throw all of this and file it, so you can understand how difficult it would be for a third party to unwind all of this fake corporate governance from the outside if you don't have the information from the other parties in discovery. General question for you, what type of information do you want to have as a potential plaintiff when you're looking at a potential lawsuit for fraud or theft of trade secrets?
Probably a whole lot of digital information. Like, I'm going to want mm-hmm. all of your computers. I want your emails.
Yeah, stuff like that. You want, you know, any actual documentation of what they took being in their possession, obviously it would be very helpful to prove, you know, if yeah. they actually have possession of your trade secrets.
I mean, I'm definitely going to be yeah. subpoenaing all of your records from every single bank that mm-hmm. you have an account. I mean, you're going to ask for people to disclose that to you, like where they have their bank accounts. But like, I'll be trying to get all of your banking records, all of your internal financial information, mm-hmm. your tax returns. If you have a CPA that prepared your tax returns, I'm going to go subpoena their documentation mm-hmm. and see what information I can get from them. I'm trying to think, it's been a while since I've handled a fraud case, but I have yeah. dealt with some business fraud cases, and it sucks that it happens to the client, but it's absolutely fascinating to try and yeah. unwind this stuff. Yeah, it's a fun one.
And you highlighted through your answer what the biggest problem is when you're a plaintiff in this situation, is that all of the evidence you want, not all of it, but a majority of it, is in the defendant's possession, not yours. Mm-hmm. So you have to get it from other people. And Oil and Gas Co. had this problem. All the information they wanted and needed was in Larry's possession. And obviously the mechanism, you kind of talked about it, to find that information is in discovery after you filed the lawsuit. And for a quick refresher, I'm going to put you on the spot, but what kind of discovery requests can you make to a party in a lawsuit after you filed it and you're in the discovery phase? Like, what type of requests can you make?
Well, requests for production, which is paper. Mm-hmm. You can send interrogatories, which is like answer me under oath. But honestly, if I'm these people, I don't think I filed the lawsuit without filing an application for a temporary restraining order first, mm-hmm. where a court is going to order them to preserve all of their information, potentially turn it over to the custody of a third-party forensic examiner if you're talking about hard drives or computers or laptops mm-hmm. or anything like that. And I'm going to ask the court for expedited discovery as well, because the huge risk here is one that you've already highlighted or maybe foreshadowed, which is all of this information is in the hands of a party who is extremely motivated to not disclose it, and therefore extremely motivated to destroy it if they have the opportunity to destroy it. So, I mean, we can wait and we can send interrogatories that are like, in 30 days, please yes. describe in detail where all of the evidence of your misdeeds exist. But this seems like a kind of urgent situation that would require injunctive relief from a court, like emergency relief.
I agree with you completely. and you highlighted the issue, which is, you know, discovery depends on a non-bad actor being on the other side, not destroying their evidence. They have to actually provide it in good faith. Oil and Gas Co. did not file, you know, for a TRO for those purposes or anything like that. They filed their lawsuit in April 2020, and by March 2021, they haven't received anything in discovery from Larry Lawyer or his family members at this point.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I know I get to come in as somebody yeah. who doesn't even litigate anymore, yes. right? I get to come in and be like, well, my opinion is this yes. strategy sucks. But the problem is that it leaves them exactly where they are. And maybe, you know, maybe you go get this temporary restraining order and ultimately a temporary injunction from the court. Maybe you go get that emergency relief and Larry destroys the evidence anyway, but you mm-hmm. have a more immediate hook for compliance if the court has already issued an order that Larry then effectively violates by hiding or destroying yes. evidence, right? So to me, sitting as like the backseat driver here, that yes. seems like an extremely stupid strategic misstep.
Well, they have a solution for that. Larry, you know, knows at this point in March 2021, he knows he's under law enforcement investigation as a result of the CFO's snitching. So he doesn't want to turn over anything because obviously it could be incriminating and it could make its way to the FBI and any criminal investigation facing him. Larry is also in a bad place because Johnny did have federal charges filed against him and flipped and admitted to everything immediately while facing those federal charges. So Johnny snitched and sang like a canary again.
Oh, that's basically. A problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Johnny confessed in his answer that he, quote, conspired with several people, including Larry Lawyer, to unlawfully share Oil and Gas Co.'s confidential drilling and leasing plans in exchange for a share of the resulting profits from the purchase and sale of certain leaseholds, end quote. So, I mean, Larry's fucked at this point with Johnny's admission. The other defendants have turned over emails as well. So Oil and Gas Co. have seen some emails from Larry Lawyer about this scheme, but they haven't seen the ones in Larry's possession. But mm-hmm. what we do have, KP, I sent you an email from Larry to some of his co-conspirators that I wanted you to read.
This is the one that I saw.
Yes.
This is the one that I saw, and it is so amazing. Oh my God. Thank you for giving me the honor of reading this, by the way. You are such an amazing friend.
I was so excited to give you this joy in your life.
Okay, I'm Larry. There are a million different ways to swing this and get rich, but let me put it this way. We have hundreds of thousands in cash available right now. We are smart as shit, and we have a fucking ton of inside connections. This next sentence is all caps. There is no way we fail or don't get rich as fuck! Exclamation point. If we do this right, we'll be sipping on umbrella drinks at 35. Parentheses, sorry, Mitch, forgot you were old balls. 40 for you. Close parentheses. Watching our fortunes gain interest and continue to grow from producing wells. I can't express how sincere I am when I say that if we don't have a $50 million plus company in a few years, I will be disappointed and shocked. I didn't build a multi-million dollar law firm at 30 by fucking around, and this is going to be no different, just bigger.
I love the ego and swagger in this and putting it all in writing. Like, this is just chef's kiss perfection.
Amazing. Incredible. Yes. Love it. Love every, like, it's a work of art.
Well, he didn't finish that email there because he kept going, and I sent you the bottom half of that email as well.
Johnny, if you want to use my Pangea account so Oil and Gas Co. is unable to track what you were doing, let me know and I'll add a user to my account. Anything else we need to make this discreet, convenient or otherwise, just let me know and it will be done. We will have a P.O. box for an address. Calls will be made from Go phones, so no caller ID comes up, or we can register phones under company names. Johnny will be mostly behind the scenes, except for what he chooses to do at home on the evenings or weekends. I'm just going over some basics. All else will be spelled out when after we meet next week.
Larry loves him some Larry. Like, he is, like we said, all swagger. Helpful that they put all their notes on a criminal fucking conspiracy in an email like this. Larry is texting other buddies, his law school buddies who are also in on the scheme. I have another text exchange for you, KP, for the next one. You be Larry and I'll be his buddy.
Okay. I just bought 117 acres from a buddy for $1,500 per acre. Drafting assignment now. We'll be sending you updated spreadsheet this afternoon to pass on to Oil and Gas Co. $94,600 in profit today. Asterisk. Stands up. Flexes in mirror and says, you are a bad motherfucker to self.
I'm the friend, big day fucker.
Yes, sir. The first of many, but we'll always remember the first.
Thoughts. <Ew. laughs> Yes.
Here's the deal. If I ever text you, asterisk stands up, flexes in mirror, and says you're a bad motherfucker to self, please immediately get in your car, drive over to my house, and just beat my face in until I'm unconscious and unable to, like, inflict myself on the world. Thank you.
No, I would read that and be like, this is a cry for help. It's code. Someone has abducted her and she's trying to send me a message. So again, this is just the evidence that Oil and Gas Co. received from the co-conspirators. So they know there has to be a treasure trove of evidence out there from Larry and his family. So KP, you've served these discovery requests. You've gotten nothing from Larry and his family. What do you do if you're Oil and Gas Co. at this point?
I guess I file a motion to compel.
Oil and Gas Co. could have done that, but they also could take matters into their own hands.
Oh? Okay, mm-hmm. I'm intrigued. Go on. Are we doing a sting?
We're doing a sting. But here's the best part. It is a private sting. There's no law enforcement involved in this sting.
Oh my fucking God. Okay, this story's incredible. I love it. Continue.
In April 2021, counsel for Oil and Gas Co. receives a tip that Larry's office building, which he owned, was up for sale and on the market. And this tipster also tells the company's counsel that people have been showing, you know, going to showings at this office building, and Oil and Gas Co.'s maps and documents were displayed in plain sight in Larry's office.
Mm-hmm.
So you're Oil and Gas Co. in this scenario. What do you do?
Do they have in-house counsel?
They do. They have a very legit GC and in-house counsel.
Okay, I know what they're gonna do, but I feel like you can't do this. Where if you sue somebody, you cannot then go surreptitiously inspect their offices or whatever under like a false pretense. That, I mean, I get it. This guy's a shithead and we hate him and he deserves everything that's coming to him. But you also still have ethical obligations. Yes. And this feels problematic. But I also am not the one creating the problem, so I am extremely excited for our little field trip to Larry's office.
So yes, the company first immediately calls the FBI and lets them know about this tip. And the FBI is kind of like, okay. That's not all, though. According to the court's findings and order on this, another company employee hatches a scheme and runs it by Oil and Gas Co.'s general counsel, who approves this scheme to go scope this out.
Okay.
The company employee reaches out to a realtor who happens to be the GC's realtor and requests a showing of the building that night, posing as an investor from St. Louis interested in buying Larry's building.
Mm-hmm.
The employee goes to a showing of the building. He seems extremely interested in the file room in the office. And he returns to the file room multiple times during the tour of this building.
I love that we're not even being subtle. He's like, my interest is in storage rooms, so I will need to inspect this one. Even though I am purchasing an office building, I'm most interested in the closet, so take me there.
Once wasn't enough. Please take me back my fourth time to this file room. The employee also takes 16 pictures of what they believe to be Oil and Gas Co. documents that are out in the open and gives those pictures to Oil and Gas Co.'s in-house attorney.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that all of the information that Oil and Gas Co. found belonged to a different company that was leasing space in Larry's building. So it wasn't even Larry's office where they found this.
No.
It was in a third company.
Oh, no. What a goat rodeo. What?
So as you can imagine, Larry finds out about this scheme. He also has it all on video from like internal videos in his building.
Oh,
and
no.
Goes nuts and basically moves for Oil and Gas Co.'s lawsuit to be dismissed as a sanction for their discovery conduct.
Sure.
Your thoughts on that?
It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oil and Gas Co.'s defense was that the building was open for showing, so it's not like they broke in and they didn't violate any laws by going on and looking at what's publicly available.
No, that's stupid, because, I mean, think about that with any business, right? Like, and this actually, it's funny you bring this up, because I thought about doing another episode, and we still might, about there was an incident in, I think it was Washington, where somebody had sued a climbing gym for an injury that happened, and it turned into this like product liability lawsuit because this guy fell because, I don't know, like a belay or something didn't mm-hmm. work, or I don't know what the equipment is. But anyway, one of the lawyers goes and like starts climbing at the very gym where this incident occurred while the lawsuit is ongoing and mm-hmm. while discovery is ongoing. And so that blew up into a whole thing. I mean, just because a party is continuing to operate their business doesn't mean that you, without notifying them, can like go nose around yes. or like, yeah.
So yeah. So they do that. Now you're Larry and Larry's lawyer. You've discovered all of this. You filed for sanctions. That's pending in front of the court. What else do you do?
Do I file like a counterclaim or sue them personally for something?
They get the third party who was the offices that Oil and Gas Co. raided, basically, and they sue Oil and Gas Company for theft of trade secrets. And
oh,
yeah. So that also happens as well. And
no.
Larry and Larry's lawyer reach out to the U.S. attorney who is currently prosecuting all these cases against Larry's co-conspirators. And basically they send them a letter and they're like, listen, do not tell Oil and Gas Co. because we're worried about what they're going to do with it. But they did all this gross stuff to us in civil litigation. And we think they broke federal law by breaking into our offices and this other party's offices to steal this information. And of course, the first thing the U.S. attorney does is forward the letter to Oil and Gas Co. And basically yeah. is like, yeah, we don't want this information. We don't know what Oil and Gas Co. did. I'm sending it to them. And then Larry is like, well, I told you not to tell them. Yeah, yeah. So then we get a hissy fit between those. So Larry files for sanctions against Oil and Gas Co. and demands the case be dismissed with prejudice as a result. This eventually ends up in an evidentiary hearing, and the judge holds that Oil and Gas Co. should be sanctioned for all the reasons we've talked about for their conduct, because you can't just find ways to gain access to another party's business and property. But the sanctions are only the cost of the attorney's fees incurred in fighting Larry for all of this, that Larry incurred as a result of all of this discovery fighting, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't think the judge dismisses the case because the problem is, Larry, you're a shithead and you clearly have done really bad stuff. So like, you know, they shouldn't have done this, but you're not going to get the case dismissed as a result. Like, come on.
In March 2023, Oil and Gas Co. files a joint motion to dismiss its claims against Larry and Larry's family members. So obviously some settlement was reached there between them
and Oil and Gas Co.
But that's also because the federal indictment rolled in against Larry and Larry's family members. So he's indicted and the feds charge Larry and his dad related to their little scheme. And the feds, again, want to get more evidence and information. They have texts between Larry and his dad where Larry's dad asks Larry to, quote, scan and send me the new map that Johnny had provided to them. Oh my God. Larry responds and lets him know, hey, it's a really big file, but I'll get it done. And Larry and his father are ultimately charged with multiple counts of wire fraud and bank fraud.
Mm-hmm.
They also, like the CFO, are not going quietly into that good night. So they file a motion related to Oil and Gas Co.'s conduct in his federal criminal trial, because they believe that Oil and Gas Co. gave all of this basically illegally obtained information to the FBI. So I sent you the caption to the motion. Tell me if you've ever seen one like this before.
Defendant Larry Lawyer's amended/corrected motion to dismiss for outrageous government misconduct. And I feel like this is something you would see in like a pro se lawsuit against the government.
Yes, exactly. But he's represented by legit lawyers. That's what's funny about this.
Fascinating.
Yes. And their argument obviously revolves around Oil and Gas Co.'s scheme to raid the office. And the court eventually denies that motion, no matter how much fuss Larry raises about what Oil and Gas Co. did.
Yeah.
One thing we haven't talked about yet in all of this is that Larry was married and is married still. Larry's wife makes her first appearance as unindicted co-conspirator number one when the federal charges start rolling in. And she was an asset to this conspiracy, basically, and kept the running spreadsheets of the LLCs and the property they owned, and basically was part of this massive scheme and conspiracy. Larry's wife also has something in common with you and me. She loves TikTok. And she loves to post TikToks with the hashtags fuck you DOJ and fuck you oil and gas co.
That's where we diverge in our interests. Yes.
She was an aspiring influencer and posted multiple videos about how her husband is being unfairly prosecuted and how he'll never go to jail.
That's not going to work out.
No, it did not work out for her. As I last checked, all of her accounts were locked. So I have not seen much from her. But all good things must come to an end for his wife as an influencer. And it does when Larry reaches a plea deal. And so in February of this year, he pleads guilty and he's currently awaiting sentencing. But that is not the end of the story, because there was breaking news in between when I wrote this and when we recorded.
What?
Because in August 2023, the authorities received a tip, an anonymous tip about Larry. And that tip said, Larry Lawyer is pending sentencing in Oklahoma City, and after he pled guilty, he had his wife purchase a rifle. Most likely, it was purchased from Cabela's in Oklahoma City, where Larry's father works. He is a high-profile defendant, he drinks heavily every day, and is very erratic due to his personality and pending prison sentence. And the tipster also noted that he had last seen the weapon in Larry's office.
Okay, couple of questions. I mean, is the implication that as a convicted felon, he's not supposed to have a firearm? Or is the implication like, A, as a convicted felon, he's not supposed to have a firearm, but B, also, he may be about to like commit an act of violence?
It's both.
Against who?
They don't know, but the government is obviously concerned about this erratic behavior. So on September 7th of this year, the FBI raided Larry's home and found 17 firearms in his possession, in his home. And you kind of alluded to it. What's the problem with that? He pled guilty to felonies, which means that he loses the right to possess firearms or ammunition.
Right.
And not only did he know this, but in his plea hearing, the judge admonishes him literally three times, saying, you understand that by pleading guilty, you now no longer have the right to own a firearm or ammunition. So it's something where he very clearly understands what is happening.
That is really unfortunate timing for him, because you said he hasn't been sentenced yet, right?
Nope. He's pending sentencing. Mm. Yep. The government is obviously making hay with this, because the FBI investigates and it turns out that Larry did try to buy a firearm from Cabela's. And when filling out the form question and the background check on whether he was pending indictment, he answered yes. And yes.
My guy, come on.
And so Cabela's immediately voided the sale, which they should. And then, amazingly, Larry's wife turns around and purchases the same gun that he intended to purchase on the same day from the same store just minutes later.
I assume these are all federal crimes too, probably.
Yeah, that's a straw purchase, basically, of a gun. Yeah. And so the government has now come out and said on September 15th, it's pending and they're examining new charges against Larry and potential charges against his wife as a straw buyer.
Wow. God, gun nuts are so crazy, because it's like, you care about your guns so much that you're going to go do something stupid like this. Like,
yeah, like, just give it up. It's fine.
Yeah, okay.
So that is the full saga of our enterprising Larry. Interestingly, I did some research. You can't pull up a lawyer's status with the Oklahoma bar unless you pay for it. And I didn't feel like paying for it. But I did see on public documents that he had been suspended from the practice of law for failing to complete his CLEs. So that is the last I saw on his bar license status. I'm assuming there's going to be movement on his bar license, if not in the past, but certainly in the future. But Larry has a pretty big sentencing hearing coming up, and he's got another new fight on his hands. So we will keep everyone updated. But I was so excited by this story, and I did not realize it was going to be so long, but it's just gold. It's absolute gold.
It's so funny. So funny. This is one of my favorite stories we've done in a long time.
Yes.
Gold. Gold. This is like the reason we started this podcast was for people like this Larry, because it's just like decision after stupid decision, but he's also surrounded by stupid people.
Yes, yes. And like just doubling down on terrible decisions and putting it all in writing for our benefit is really like the icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, next up, we may do a Hot Toppies episode. I've also been working on a story about a lawyer with some sticky fingers. So we'll see what we end up doing. But I love this for us. What an absolute delight. This is the best way to start my day. It was a chaotic start to the day, but this was perfect.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys again for listening. You can email us at badlawyerpod@gmail.com. You can find us on all the major social media sites at badlawyerpod. And we really appreciate you listening. And please take time to leave a review and give us a rating.
Oh, and I have for people who have made it to the very end of the episode. If you would like an invitation to Blue Sky, which is the... I mean, basically, they just like took Twitter and moved it to a different server.
Without the Nazis?
Yeah, like sans the Nazis.
Yes.
And thank God, sans Elon Musk. If you would like a Blue Sky invitation code, we have just a few of those that we haven't used. So you can email badlawyerpod@gmail.com. And if we can, we'll share a code with you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.